Welcome to the Kids with Big Emotions podcast. I am your host, Andy Clark, and today we have with us Melissa, who was a teacher for quite a large amount of her career, and then she made a shift. And she made a shift in order to be able to work with kids, to be able to really expand her wings and do what she really, really wanted to do with these kids. I actually have a quote from Melissa that when we were talking earlier, it's something that she had said that I wanted to share with you guys, that said, "It's okay to step out of what society deems to be the right thing to do for your child. It's okay to listen to your intuition, go against the grain, follow your own path to support oneself or your children. You are the parent and you know your child the best. Please don't let anyone else have you believe any different." And that is why we have Melissa here today. So I am going to let Melissa fill you in all about herself and where she would like to get started in this journey. And then we're going to go from there. So thank you so much for being here today, Melissa.
Oh, thank you for having me. Oh, that quote that I gave myself chills all over again. Yeah, because it is a doozy. My name is Melissa. I am a former educator. I have to say, I was not a teacher. I was an educational assistant. You know, those are completely, totally different job roles and careers, I would say, although working beautifully together, or trying to say the least. And yeah, so let me start off. I am a mom of two teenage boys. I have a lovely husband who is in the entrepreneur world as well, and was very much a support in me stepping out of the education world into entrepreneurship world, which was very key in support. And I also have a lovely male dog. I am the lonely only female in my household around this lovely male energy that my family is going in. And another quote that I like to go by is my journey is my offering. And that very much goes hand in hand with the first quote that I did too. I was in education, pretty much my whole life, I must say. If you asked my beautiful warrior mama, I was 2 years old in our four season veranda teaching my imaginary friends with her high heeled shoes on. Like, there's pictures of me. And at two, I didn't really even know what it was at that time, but yet I was doing it. Then at, the ripe old age of five, I entered the traditional school system and carried me right through to graduation in grade 12, where I then immediately went to post-secondary to acquire the degrees and certificates, where I then launched right back into the supply list and then hopping on with different contracts before our two boards, before landing in one for 18 years. So during that time, I'm going to say the job role within that role of being an EA vastly changes. Like, I kind of call it a pendulum. It swung this way and then it swung that way. And while it was doing that, the job roles very much changed during that time. And I do remember one of my college professors saying, your generation, you're going to change job roles or careers a whopping five times. And I'm like, no, I've always known what I've wanted to do. I always knew what I was going to do. The blinders were on, quote unquote, and away I went. I'm like, no, I won't. And then she also said too, she described three different people. And she started off saying, this first person shows up to work in life every day and is exuberant and giving and happy and la 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 la. And then the second person is a little more reserved, still loves what they do, a little more, stressed, and some days are tricky, but still loves the job. And then there's our third person who is burnt out, who doesn't love their job role or even the balance in life anymore. And she, she's like, which one? She posed the question, which one are you? And, as a 18 or 19 year old that I was at that time, I'm like, oh, I'm the first one. I'm the first person. Like, these are three completely different people, and a lot of hands went up for that one. And then she paused for a moment. And then she said, they're all the same person. And that kind of stopped me in my tracks. So I tried to be very aware, both as a woman and then a mom within this job role. But the intuition and the downloads kind of kept coming as I was under the traditional system and supporting families and the children that were coming in inclusive environments, that something was amiss, something was shifting, not only within myself, but, you know, stuff, here's how we're going to solve this situation or whatever. And it just didn't ring true to me and to what families were looking for while their children were in and under our support during a school day. So I kind of always walked the line, if you will, because there was a knowing of how it would be supportive and helpful. And then under the, I'm going to call it restrictions of what I needed to do under that job role. And those three people that my college professor described, I suddenly, it was me blended into one. And after those 18 years, or I was at year 18, the final, I'm going to call it big bang download, if you will, kind of came more for finding a different way to serve children that I work with, different than academically, and more from a, you know, an emotional awareness standpoint, because it all works together. And I knew it wasn't working for me. I knew it wasn't working for the students I was supporting during those 18 years, and specifically during that last year that I was there. And it wasn't supporting families, which I knew what was my truth. And I had started my business through the love and support of my husband, who had already landed in the mindfulness world for himself. I could feel that calm energy. I could feel the shifts in him and see it. And, you know, when that happens, when that resonation happens, you're kind of like, I need that. I want some of that. And self-care was not a thing back then, because as that type of professional, you give and you give and you give, and then compassion fatigue takes over, and whammo, bammo, that kind of hits that way. And so he helped me get into the mindfulness world. And I'm like, well, if this is out there for adults, there must be things for kids. Because if kids learned this as a life skill, if kids learned this as the foundation of all the other things, like, let's flip it around. It's not academics first and then emotional awareness. It's actually the opposite. Get that emotional foundation there and keep like taking those golden nuggets as you learn them. Then, you know, if academics are a thing, then the academics will come, then whatever else is going to come. But emotions are really the foundation of it, and helping kids find their calm. And as I found it for myself, I then found the ways to then help and support families just in a different way. And I had started Mindful Kids Stratford, that's what it was called at the time, before rebranding, which is now Mindful Kids Inc. And I was running a Mindful Kids series at the time, and I had the resignation letter kind of all going, and it was there, but I just couldn't hit send yet. And we were at the end of the series with 3 weeks left in the summer before I was scheduled to go back to work. And mindful eating is always at the end of that. Kids love it, and they were coming. And I just remember, I'm like, no. And I hit send for the resignation. I put my phone away. I turned it right off. I told the families, it was only like a 15-minute program, but I said, just so you know, my phone's not going to be anywhere on. So like, if you need me to come knock on the door instead, because it was out of my home at the time. And I resigned. And I started to do it a new way for me. I started to support and guide families in a completely different way, maybe than they were used to or thought they had to. And it's just beautifully blossomed and grew into now what is Mindful Kids Inc. and all the beautiful offerings we have, supporting families very much in a holistic way through a mindfulness lens. And oh gosh, like, yeah, speaking my truth and living in that is very freeing. And it also is to the families, to let them know there are other options. You don't have to do it the way you're told or the way, you know, you think you have to, because parents are the experts. You brought these beautiful children into the world. You know them the best. And everybody should be looking and listening to you, not the other way around.
And that's so tough. Like, we're brought up with, I mean, there's so much in what you just said. So I'm kind of like, which one do we touch on? And so the first piece is to what you did just say about the parents being the expert. We have been brought up to believe that, and the belief isn't like fully wrong, is that we should respect teachers, we should respect the just elders, we should respect like all of these people in their professions and all of that stuff. And I do believe we still do need to have respect, 100%. That is all there. The thing with that, though, is that they're missing a piece that never used to have to, that never used to be. And that piece is asking the parents now, because there is so much information out there on the internet. There's so many things to learn. There's so many books. Like, we are surrounded by such an information society now that parents are more knowledgeable and understanding, and there's more intuition and that in with parenting now, that there is that step missing, I believe, in the schools too, where they really do sit and go with the parent, okay, what do you see at home? Because what they might see at the school is also different than what they'll see at home behavior wise. And believing what the parent is saying about these things, as well as understanding sometimes too, where a parent might be really pushing the academic and you're seeing and flipping that into being that there's another piece missing for this child.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like, I call it the whole child experience, or academics are only one small slice of the whole child pie, if you will. And yes, if the strategies and all of the things do work, and let's be honest, sometimes they did or they do for a little bit, but to really listen to the parents to say, okay, we've tried this, we've gave it the college try, but this isn't working. What else is there for us to do? Really kind of has that, like, it's kind of like a tennis ball conversation. And it's not always just one-sided of the school saying, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. But really having the parent side of that tennis ball conversation being accepted, being heard, and really working together to have that whole child perspective with whatever those supports needed for a child to have a joyous and life, because that's what they're supposed to have. And if it's not that, I can tell you they're communicating it in one way or the other. And we really have to listen to our kids, and we really have to listen to the parents. And
yeah, so that was a big piece of what you had said. And in all fairness to the schools too, when you have so many kids in a class and you're very limited in resources, it is hard to accommodate everything that the parents are saying. And it's just not even necessarily the environment to be able to give them those things. That being said, there are tools, I recall too, when my kids were in school as well, going and speaking with the teachers all about stress and overwhelm and stuff like that. And talking to the principal as well about, even with the morning announcements, if they just did for the entire school 2 minutes of breathing, mm-hmm. that would already have an impact on the entire school. And mm-hmm. it just wasn't like, so there are still some small things that they could be bringing in. So we could go down that rabbit hole, and we're not going to, because we're going to talk about what it is that you do there. So when we get into that, so with you and your story, you started this though by your husband getting into mindfulness and mm-hmm. you sensing his calm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take this guess that before you were able to help these kids, you had to find your calm first.
Yeah, I sure did. I very much come from a perspective where we can learn from our kids. It's just not us teaching them the things, guiding them the things, listening to our words. Mindful Kids Inc. is very much built upon this mindfulness as a lifestyle. Yes, it helps with big feelings and finding our calm and, you know, de-escalates other certain things and behaviors. But you know what? We really need to listen to our kids. They are at the ages where they are most open about all things. They are honest. Their imaginations are amazing. And as adults, we can learn from them. But it is an energy share. So myself at the time, the end of my traditional education career, self-care was kind of a thing. It was just starting to be a thing, like take a bubble bath with the scent of soap, which I didn't like. Like, it just didn't fit for me. And I had to find my own balance and self-care journey in addition to adding mindfulness in. But once I started, and my husband was already doing that, really sit, and for us under the mindfulness umbrella, it was meditation. That's where we were leaning. There's a whole umbrella of mindfulness and different things. But that calm energy between us then rippled and was felt by our young boys who were, I want to say 5 and 3 at the time, maybe a little bit older. And it totally changed our whole between the four walls of our house and how we operated. And they were very much into mindfulness when they were little too. They were part of the whatever offerings I had in group form, they were a part of it. Now in Teenageville, it may appear that it has went away, but I know it's still in there for, you know, when they hit their next decade, because Teenageville is just a whole other ballgame as they are growing and evolving. But when those ripples come from the kids and from the parents, and that is felt, that's where, for a lack of a better word, where the magic of mindfulness and the magic of calm really comes. Because here's the thing, the world isn't changing. Coping, learning to cope in positive ways and really listen to each other and having that calm, clear mind to catch what our kids are saying to us, or that our kids catch what we're saying to them from like an energy standpoint, because every feeling is different energy on the scale. And just being present, I know in the mindfulness world, the adult world, it's called the present moment. In Kidville over here, we call it the right here, right now. And once the kids learn how to do it, and when parent, and then the thing that we do here is the kids learn with us and then we go home, they go home. And as part of a challenge, it's like, teach someone in your house what you were guided with today, because you're the new guide. You're the new teacher. You're the new mindful expert. They get to be the student at home. You get to be the teacher. And that way it's a beautiful reciprocation of what has been learned and then what can grow and be integrated through mindfulness in their house after they hang out with us.
It's about though, that like in the home, it and anybody teaching or doing these things, if you, so as for a parent, that if you want your child to calm and learn how to manage the emotions and manage everything that's going on in their life, that as a parent, you need to learn and model those skills as well. And quite often, I know it's ingrained in us to put our kids first and do everything for our kids. And I know, like, I have all these parents that come to me for trying to help their kids with the big emotions. And maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but in my support circle where I do work with the people in that, it's like, I'm teaching them the skills to help their child, but I'm asking them to also do some of these skills on themselves.
Yeah.
Because if the parent isn't able to be calm and connected, then that child never will be at home. So if they're maybe out in an environment, maybe there's a class that they have where the teacher is very calm and everything, but then they're coming home to a parent who is pushing really hard at their end, maybe having so many struggles that are happening in our home, adult life is not easy. But if that parent, which most of us were not taught, our generation was not taught to be able to switch into our calm system from a resting system, if we're not taught how to do that switch, which as you said as well, is different for everybody on how we switch that. Mm-hmm. If they're not able to do that, then those kids will struggle even if they have the tools and the skills to do that in your home.
They can. What we kind of guide our kiddos here from a child perspective lens is, we can't control anybody else. Wouldn't it be great if Steve, who ran across the classroom and knocked over our Lego tower that we were working on and ready to support the classroom, like he just blew by and he knocked over our tower and he didn't stop and he just kept going. Right. And, you know, we would love to control Steve and tell him, like, you just knocked over my tower, like, come and help me rebuild it or whatever. And Steve could very much turn around and say, no, like, I'm not going to do that. That wasn't me. Whatever would come out of Steve could come out of Steve's mouth. We can't control that. But what we can control is taking these mindful tools, finding our calm, and really living from the inside out. And when you do that, and when you integrate it as a proactive skill, it kind of forms, like, for lack of a better word, like a protective shield, where kids learn they don't have to take on Steve's energy, that mindfulness can really help that. And the same goes with parents, or, you know, anybody else in their everyday life who they come across. They really learn to root and ground themselves in mindfulness from that perspective. And the funny thing is, speaking of Steve, yes, we can't control him, but what does mindfulness really help us with in that situation? What did we miss? Because maybe that big glittery feeling of anger came as he blew by and knocked over our tower. Like, it really clouded our mind. It made our mind very glittery. And what we missed, and what mindfulness can help with, is that Steve didn't actually mean to knock over our tower. He was just trying to get to the other side of the room to the Kleenex box because he had a nosebleed. He didn't mean it. But, you know, when that those glittery feelings and the mind kind of takes over, we tend to miss a lot of things in the situation. And when we're able to use mindfulness and find our calm, we can stay calm, live from here, from our hearts and from our minds. They're connected, they're working together, and we can see what's really happening and then realize, I can't control any of that, but I can control myself, what I do, what I say, and what I feel in that situation.
And for the parents listening too, that's the same for them. So when their child is having the meltdowns before they've gone and filed the help, if the parent does work on those things themselves as well, then they are able to look at their child from that different lens, from that lens of, oh, wow, what is really happening here? Why is this outburst truly happening? Instead of reacting to, there's an outburst, I need to react right now and just get it to stop. We come at it from such a different lens as a parent when we're able to get in that calm ourselves. And I call it like big picture think. We can actually see what's around us, see everything around. And we can see it through that lens where we're then able to really help our child. We're then able to help them work on the things that are there.
Yeah. And vice versa. Yeah, that's exactly it. I love it. And that's what I say about how we do mindfulness here. We take all of the things in the adult world of mindfulness and we just bring it down to like kid bite size, easy to use, easy to remember, easy to infuse and integrate, which works hand in hand with adults as well. There's a lot of lingo out there. It can seem like it's almost overwhelming at a point, but to make it interactive and make it fun and have it a whole family experience, yeah, it can be quite the game changer for fam jams.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to what you just said, I think that's so important to bring it down, is we are so good at overcomplicating things. We're so good at making things big. We're so good at just, well, being so exhausted too, that we're like, oh my God, I can't add one more thing. What is one thing that these kids can go home and teach a parent in a very simple way, to go and teach that parent to help that parent develop their first skill?
Oh, that's a good question. My mind leans to the mind jar because it's probably the most popular Pinterested recipe concoction out there. That's where I kind of lean to first, because it can be very simple, as it's a representation of our mind. And when you shake it, all of the glitter in there is a feeling or a situation that has happened in the past where our mind wanders to. And with that comes certain feelings of, like, it could be anything: mad, disappointed, jealous, embarrassed, rage, like whatever it is. It can also go the other way. That glitter can be situations that haven't even happened at all yet, and our mind is really good at thinking worst case scenario one way. And I'm here to tell families and parents that when the mind does wander that way, because that brings up shy, scared, nervous, anxious, uncertain, 99.9% of the time, it never happens what our mind, that one way they think it's going to be. And that's beautifully what the mind jar represents, is you can use it to use your super sense of sight, and you just get mesmerized by the glitter, and it just simply, you watch it until the jar clears, and then you do a check-in with yourself. Does the mind jar match how I'm feeling on the inside from heart and mind? And if it's not, yeah, shake it again. And you can work with the mind jar as long as you need to find your calm. There's more layers to the mind jar, as I like to say. My kiddo clients and families will tell you, like, when we do the mind jar in session, they're like, I had no idea there was so many layers to this. And there is. Now, when kids are little and families are very new to mindfulness, super sense of sight, watch it settle. and readjust as need be. Then as we get a little bit older, we really tune into our breath with it, and we're using our sense of touch with our breath, and we're adding layer and layer, or I should say unlayering more to the mind jar than just shaking and watching it settle. And that's a beautiful thing because that helps the mind come into the present moment, or how we call it, the right here, right now. Our minds like to wander and our minds like to think. And that's not a bad thing. That's how we learn things in whatever kind of school we go to, and learning all the things of life outside of school. Where it gets tricky is when the mind stays out of the right here, right now, and we're thinking about those situations and those feelings kind of rise up, if you will. And every time you can think of the right, and you can catch your mind. I just did this with a couple kiddos last night in session. It's not a bad thing that it happens. Like, our minds lean negative and our minds lean, oh gosh, like, again, worst case scenario, but it's actually a good thing once we start to notice and pay attention to when our minds wander, because then we can tell our minds, no mind, I'm focusing on the mind jar, if it's a mindful tool, or no mind, I'm focusing on what mom's really saying right now, because it's probably kind of important, or no mind, I am going to sleep right now. Like, whatever it might be, it's constantly about pulling that mind into the present moment, which the mind jar so beautifully helps with in a visual form.
Interesting. Okay. So for people that are listening to this and not being able to see, to give that a bit of a visual, I'm thinking of it like a snow globe in a sense, where you kind of trick it, and that snow globe is shaking. Mm-hmm. And that's all of these ruminating thoughts, all of these ruminating thoughts. You're ruminating on what's going to happen and how are we going to do this? And how's that going to happen? And if I do this, then this is going to happen. And then this is going to happen. And then this is going to happen, and everything's snowballing. And that is all going in the snow globe, and the snow globe is just going, but it's all this glitter. And so you're doing that and you're watching all of those ruminating thoughts settle down to the bottom.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the visual that we have for these parents. And that's that visual of thinking, okay, all of those ruminating thoughts can settle. So as you're settling, you're bringing them all down to calm. So this is very similar to something that I do, that we do like a body scan in the sense too, where it's like when you're ruminating, when you are all thinking about everything and anything that is just like
all the things,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the adulting things. Like, we can hashtag adulting. And we can say, we need a body scan, or we need this mind jar. Yeah. And so with that, we have all of these things that with the body scan, it is literally going through your body and thinking, okay, thinking of my toes, thinking of my ankles. So you're actually stopping all of those outside thoughts and just thinking on every single part of your body as you let it just relax. Yeah. And it's not that those thoughts aren't there, the things aren't happening, things aren't going, but we're bringing our body back to calm and we're relaxing our nervous system so that nervous system allows us to switch from the stress nerve to the resting nerve, which allows us to get into that different mindset that can actually see things and think of them different and big picture think and see things. So yeah, I love that. It's like the snow globe, the mind map, the snow globe. I love that analogy for a kid. So they would go and teach their parent that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't believe in teaching 50 million mindful tools, because that's just going to create overwhelm as well. So yeah. I would say I have maybe a good 30. And if a kiddo has a toolbox of, like, for a summer camp week, for example, they're going to have 5 mindful tools that they take home under the summer camp theme that goes home. And what I find then is, well, it can work one of two ways. Kiddos then, yes, they take in mindfulness just right for them with each of those mindful tools. Are they going to go home and spit out exactly what I said or a head camp counselor said or something? No, but they took it in just right for them at that time. And that's their basis. That's where they're at. They're going to go home and guide or teach their parents at that. The parents then get to see kind of where they're at with that mindful tool. And then from there, they get to pick which mindful tool works best for them. So in some instances, some kids I've seen, it's one mindful tool for every feeling and every situation. Perfect. For other kiddos, it's this mindful tool for this feeling or situation, and it's this mindful tool for this feeling or situation. And they proactively can pull these mindful tools from their invisible mindful backpack, I'm going to say, because it goes with them wherever they go. And even if they think they forgot it, it's always there. Because these tools, yes, the mind jar can be a concrete mindful tool that they hold in their hand and they can see, but we also turn them into secret superpowers, which means they go with them wherever they go in their everyday life. And they're always there for the kiddos to use in those moments of when they need to cope, maybe in a more positive way than they had been doing in the past.
Yeah, I love this. I love this so much. And the thing too is, I love that they have their backpacks, and I'm just imagining this is probably not at all what you do, but you maybe it may be something you do. I'm not sure, but even asking them what's in their backpack so they can see that it's a different, that different kids have different tools. Some may have one, some may have many, they have different ones, and to see that the tools that each kid uses are different so that they can also understand that not everybody, that the same tools don't work for every single person. And that's okay, because they have their own different superpowers and their own different super suit that, as you're saying, it's so cool.
And, yeah. And different tools at ages and stages of life. I swear I giggle because I just, this story just knocks my socks off, and I've been part of it for 8 years now. But there was a kiddo when I used to do presentations in preschools and like nursery schools. And I did a mindfulness circle with some beautiful preschools. And there were like 2-year-olds in there too. And they're beautifully at their most mindful at that age anyway. And this one, a cutie patootie little girl, like she just like, I, she just took it in so well. And I didn't know she was 2 at the time. And to start with me at a Mindful Kids series, it was 5 at the time. And her mom reached out to me right away. And she's like, she loved this. She can't wait till the day she turned 5. The day she turned 5, she came to a Mindful Kids series. She then moved on to one-to-one mindfulness. And she just turned 11, and she's been with me with different services and different mindful approaches since she's been 2. And now she is a leader in training at camp this summer. And she is a perfect example of different tools when she was 4 for just how she wanted to, how she needed them and how she wanted to use them. And like her mom came for family sessions or joined her in sessions too, so she could then help integrate at home when outside of being with me. And as she has grown and she's developed, and the beautiful benefits of mindfulness kind of ebb and flow for what she needs at that age and stage, I always tell her, she's like, oh, you said that so different this time. And I'm like, no, I didn't. We're just both at different ages and stages of our own development. And you're just taking it in for what you need at this time. You know, how I say things and how I guide children and families with things, it never changes. And I only do a certain one. She's probably my only one that has every mindful tool that I have ever done. But she, oh, she's so amazing. And I can't wait for her to step into this new leader in training role this year, and for her to share these mindful tools in her own way and her own experience with our campers. That week is going to be unlike any other we've ever experienced here, which is really cool.
Amazing. So I have a question. So you do this, let's say that you do this brain. Oh my gosh, I just forgot the word of it. What is the snow globe? I keep thinking
mind jar.
Mind jar. So you do this mind jar. I keep thinking of a snow globe. You do this mind jar. And let's say that there is a child that just like for any tool, like at the moment, this is the start of their journey with you. Mm-hmm. And they are really stuck on implementing anything in the moment because their system is so taxed. Yeah. How do you help and support?
How do we approach that? Well, I always say whenever a kiddo is in the midst of a big feeling, that as adults, that's not where we say, I think a mindful tool would be helpful right now. And if you hand them one, chances are it's going to be thrown right back at you, rightfully so. So I always say, when you proactively set up the space, the mindful backpack, the mindful toolbox in concrete form, or have a practice time proactively, it's just like all of our sports or activity kids out there. They're practicing those muscles in their body for whatever sport, right? To compete in different sports. Our thing is everyday life, right? And the brain and the mind is a muscle, just like your core is, just like your biceps, like your tris, whatever muscle, you have to work it out. You have to practice it and engage in it to have it do what you want it to do. And the same thing is for the mind. So if we practice the mindful tools proactively, I always recommend at bedtime, you pick a mindful tool and you practice it, or there's guided meditations that I have that go with each mindful tool, because sometimes a more structured practice is easier than trying to get them to pick a mindful tool. And if they're really little, you have it as an open corner to play with where they can just go to be curious about it, to play with each mindful tool that they can see with their sense of sight, they can hold in their hands, and they can be really curious with it, because the breathing ball is another mindful tool. And you will see kids, once they realize that breathing ball opens and closes, their breath matches to it. And the more they kind of are curious with it, you will notice that breathing ball opening and closing, those breaths become longer and longer, and they're naturally doing it. They might not even know what they're doing, but as parents and as adults, we can see it happening. So if you set up an environment like that, that's very much going to help in those times where we really want them to pull out a mindful tool, right? Because the mind and the heart, it's going to know what to do because it's been practicing, because it's been curious, it's been played with, and then it integrates beautifully into our system.
No, this makes all sense. It's just so great in how you do work with these kids and how amazing it is. And it's just, yeah, I know I love when I'm working with the kids and working with the parents too, and bringing that gap. And when you see these kids start developing the tools that you're teaching, and you're just like, oh, it just fills your bucket on why you do this.
Right. And parents also ask, like, when am I going to know? When am I going to know when, you know, quote unquote, this is working, is often how, and that's fine. I love that. And I'm like, you're going to see something in their behavior probably completely change as to what they have done before, whether on the scale of big or small, kind of what that is, whether they start sleeping longer through the night, whether they come right in for dinner when you call for dinner time, when they probably want to keep doing what they were doing before, whether it's something at school, like there's all, you'll see like a tweak or a difference. And then that's how you know. And as parents and as adults, we see it right away. And kids are really good too. So you know they're taking in the mindful tool when they start telling you, do you want to turn with my mind jar? Like, I think this might help you. So even though they're kind of calling you out on it, right? And my kids did the same with me. That's actually a sign that they have integrated this. They remember this. And even though it might not be in them yet to go grab that mindful tool, the fact that they see it in others is a big step towards that, which is a good thing.
No, that's amazing. Absolutely love that. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So we could go on forever on this. We do have to, I mean, because this is such so big for you and I mean, this is what we both do with kids, right? And it's just fascinating. So is there anything that we have not covered about these kids that we need to cover, that the parents need to know, that we haven't covered yet?
That's a good question. Oh, we have talked about so many of the good things.
We have.
Ooh, I think it's just to find those little moments of, like, when you practice mindfulness, find and feel that joy in life. Gratitude very much goes hand in hand with mindfulness. It is entrenched in our group programming that we do here. And gratitude is the same. It ripples and it helps us see things from different perspectives, again, in a more positive light. And I think when we can start to really capture that and we really feel into it, that's also a game changer for families as well. I know last year I started to challenge my clients and my kiddo group campers to, it's easy to come in the morning and they get a little leaf because we have a gratitude tree, and they each get a leaf every morning they come, and they can draw or print something that they are grateful for. And then they go put it on the tree, and we watch this beautiful gratitude tree grow throughout the entire summer. And the challenge was, it's easy to think of something, but now I want you to really lean into what emotion is there. And they will say happy first, which, you know, is great and it's fine and it's true, but sit with that and in a minute. Like, get quiet and still in what we call mindful bodies and see, is there another feeling there that goes hand in hand with it? Like, really feel into that situation. If they really love, like, obviously that a lot of them will write or draw their family pet. Like, sit with that for a minute. Picture your family pet and what kid, like, you can see they open their eyes and they'll go, Melissa, there was love, like Bob, like with that happy. And that is what really roots and integrates that gratitude practice, which then it just snowballs, it ripples, it's beautiful. And it also helps families to use mindfulness to really feel the joy of family life, which is what this is supposed to be about as well. Not all the other stuff.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's amazing. All right. So you have summer camps happening.
In our Stratford location. Yeah.
In Stratford in Ontario. And then everything else that you have is on your website that you have going on. So if parents want to go and check that out, all of your website, everything will be in the show notes just for anybody who is listening verbally. So we'll put everything in the show notes. I've got all that there, but what will be there? Like, how do they find you? What's the best way to find you?
Oh gosh, the Instagram world and the Facebook world, Mindful Kids Inc. Are both the handles on both of those. You will see there's lots of spots on the website to, like, they can pop in for a call if they have questions and they want to talk about something. If you're not sure what the right fit is, there's children's private mindfulness, both virtual and in person. And together we can find, like, the best fit, whatever that may be. And we actually have a new branch that we're actually launching soon. Andy, I haven't even told you about this. And it encompasses whole family wellness through a mindfulness lens. So I'm excited to kind of roll that out soon and throughout the rest of 2025, which is exactly what we were talking about today, taking care of the whole family through different holistic methods that go hand in hand with mindfulness. So that's coming out too, which is exciting.
Amazing. All of those links are in the show notes below. So if you guys go into the show notes of this episode, all of the links from Melissa are there. You can contact Melissa. And I think there's some other special links that you have provided as well. So everything is there. And thank you so much for being here today. This is just
been amazing. No problem. Thank you for having me. I, as you can tell, I can talk mindfulness like all day long to anybody. Yeah. So yeah, no, this has been wonderful.
I love this. All right. Amazing. Thank you everybody for listening. If you would like to contact Melissa, definitely go into the show notes below and reach out to her. If you would like to work with me either one-on-one or group as well in my support circle, those links are also in the show notes. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and also share it with a friend. That's how we get this out there. And we will see you in the next episode. Thank you.